Welcome to Healing the Witch Wound Globe and Online Summit, walking the bridge home to your sacred sovereign truth. I dream of a giant thorn in my chest, protruding from the center of my heart, more like a big stick than a thorn, woody and brown, huge and round, uncomfortable. A thorn that had been there for a while. Another version of me stepped forth and, reaching over, gently and firmly extracted the thorn from the center of my heart. Sin, shame, secrecy, guilt, fear, suppression, extracted, creating space for healing, forgiveness, openness, for me and my lineage, for you and the collective, healing eons of persecution and hiding, forgiving those brothers and sisters who denounced us. And this summit is an initiation to heal the witch woundings over the millennia. It's a call to release all that no longer serves you, to rise up and return to wholeness, your sacred sovereign truth that we need in our world right now. So witches, are you ready to stir up your cauldrons? And I'm your host, Emer Stassen, and I'm really delighted to welcome today's expert speaker, Tarja Ward. Hi, Tarja.
Hi, Emer. I'm so happy to meet you and be here. I'm really excited about this subject that you're working with. Thank you for doing it.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for saying yes as well.
It was all I could say. I couldn't have said other.
It was the only option I gave you.
It was the only option.
Thank you. And I'll say a few words about you, Tarja, for viewers. Okay. So Tarja Ward, PhD, lives in Asheville, North Carolina, where she has a private practice offering dream analysis, depth, psychological and spiritual guidance to individuals. She has worked intensively with her own and other people's dreams for more than 40 years, and for nearly 20 years has been an avid student of Indigenous ways of knowing and being. Tarja conducts a monthly global community dream symposium, which I highly recommend, wherein people from all over the world share the messages coming in through their dreams. And Tarja also conducts retreats and vision quests, teaches online courses, and offers oracular readings upon request. And your topic today, Tarja, which I think deserves a drum roll, which is so exciting, is called Preserving What the Witches Knew. So where would you like to start with that?
Well, I will start with how the subject came to me, which was in a dream. And it was last April that I had two dreams in a row that I knew were connected. And you know, maybe this is familiar to many of you dreamers, but there are some dreams where you're in this deep, dark place where there's no images, there's no light, but it's just like teeming with energy and potential. And it's like you're in that place that's in the deep, dark womb of the mother or something. I don't know, someplace there. And that's where both of these dreams took place. There are nothing but coming out of the dream with certain words and images. And the first one, it was on April 22nd of this year, 2020. The first one I came up with utilizing and awakening shamanic capabilities. And I knew that the dream was saying, I mean, this comes from such a deep place in the world's soul that all of us, every single one of us, just like we have a liver and kidneys and a nose and eyes and all of that, we have these shamanic capabilities and that they need to be utilized and activated now. And that's what the dream was. It's just like every single one of us, we are equipped with this. This is in our DNA, in our cellular structure. It's ours and it must be reclaimed. So that was one dream. And then the next night I had this dream. I went into that same kind of place and I came out with preserving what the witches knew. And I thought, you know, I didn't have any stories, any images, anything but just that. And it felt like the same as the one the night before, like it was for everyone, that this is our like mandate now. This is a calling that somehow we need to just open ourselves to what does this mean? Preserving what the witches knew. And then it wasn't that long later that I got the invitation. I didn't know what to do with these dreams. I mean, I'm hopefully will be working with them every day and every hour for the rest of my life. I mean, I think they're both something to continually unfold from that deep place in the world soul that we are all part of. So there will probably never be a day that I'm not working with it on the one hand. On the other hand, it's like, what do I do? You know, so it's something to just sort of continue to muse with. But when I got your invitation, I thought, okay, well, here's the first step. This is something to do. Somebody wants me to talk about this. So what shall I say? But here I am to talk about it. And so, you know, and I think that they were connected too, because the witches are shamans. You know, their gifts were shamanic. You know, they understood that all the voices of all the invisible world as well as the visible world, and the more than human world as well as the human world. They, you know, they listen to all the voices, just like the shamanic capabilities are about. That's what the witches had. They just were called by different names, but they were the same powers and the same capabilities. So, you know, how do we go back and preserve that? And what is the sort of special maybe quality about the women's knowledge that the witches represented, because it was the women, not the shamans of the world, but the women that were subject to the Holocaust that happened. And so, you know, I'm sure others of your speakers will be talking about it, but we can't say it often enough, just to say there were, they say, 9 million women killed over 300 years. 9 million women during this time where the Christianization of Europe and then the Inquisition and all of that just took women out. So what was it about what these women knew that was so scary to the patriarchy, to the, you know, to the chosen order rather than the natural order? What was it that they represented that so many women, and then how did it get silenced? Yeah. How is it that we don't even speak of it? And, you know, I could go on and on about that. I won't, you know, I have ideas and insights about that too, but it just got silenced. It's not even reported. As you were saying, there's only a little plaque to say somewhere that something happened. There aren't the museums and the really intensive inquiries into what is this about that we would do this to so many women. So I think it needs now to be the question asked, you know, not for retribution or anything, but just to understand there's something that got suppressed there. And these women knew the powers of nature like a shaman does, you know, like in the most unique kind of way. And their records, they aren't in libraries. It was an oral tradition passed along through families and through the women. So when they killed them all out and made it so frightening to ever speak of what they knew, or else their family would be burned at the stake, so they had to be silenced in order to survive at all that knowledge went with them. That's what they wanted. They wanted to eradicate it, and but the truth won't die. So here we are.
Yes, we will not be silent.
Yeah, eventually, you know, some many hundred years later, it's coming back up now, just like it's a natural process. It just is coming right out of the earth again, and people like you are picking up on it. Okay, something needs to be done here. And so I'm so grateful to you for creating this summit, and to any and all of us who begin to open up the records of the wisdom.
Yes. And when, thank you for sharing all of that. And when you share that it's coming out of the earth, you know, it is seeping through the very soles of my feet and, you know, humming through me to that it feels like these witches, you know, and I hadn't heard that figure of like 9 million women killed. It's unbelievable.
I think I heard that, I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I heard that in the film called The Burning Times. It's available on YouTube. It really should be seen. It's really well done. It tells the history of what happened. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to watch that. Yeah. Yeah, they are definitely speaking and want. I really get that feeling of they want to be spoken about. Like, who are each of these women? And some men were burnt as well. Who, mainly women, who are they? And what is it they knew, as you say?
Mm-hmm. And why was it so threatening? What it seemed to be so frightening to the patriarchy? What? Why? You know,
yeah.
They're just trying to heal people, basically. But somehow, you know, there's a lot there to that that we need to understand. And these now have become parts of ourselves. There's this authentic knowing about nature. And then there's this part of ourselves that has learned to survive over the last few hundred years that is afraid to remember or to know what it was that we once knew and that is still in us to know. But we're afraid because maybe we and our whole family will be burned or removed or, you know, in the modern day, it's just abused. And I mean that psychologically, basically, just dismissed and criticized and, you know, the ways that we eradicate the way people know nowadays is different from burning, thank God, but it can feel the same.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it is, as you said, still here, you know, in our memory, in our DNA, this somatic mm-hmm. memory and the fear mm-hmm. can feel very real,
mm-hmm.
really can.
Yeah.
And that dream, both dreams that you've had, feels so powerful and so real and alive as well.
Mm-hmm.
And could you talk about, because, you know, 40 years you've spent exploring dreams, so I'm sure you've got quite a collection.
I do, Amy. I have a whole bookshelf that's volumes, 300-page volumes that I've written my dreams down, and it's this wide now with all my dream journals from all those years. I'm very avid about tracking my dreams. I feel like that's where the truth is. Our dreams are basically our connection to the divine mind and to the ancient knowing and the ancient wisdom. It's where they can't eradicate. You know, they can do something to our body. They can even do something to our brains and our minds, but they can't touch this deep interconnection to where the dreams are, where the dreams take us. And that's something that we need to remember and value. And, you know, maybe the fact that they probably, I know in some religious frameworks, they talk about not listening to your dreams, only listen to the priests. Whatever your dream is saying, that's just either nonsense or the devil or something else. If it's telling you anything different from what the priest or the established order is saying, then it's wrong. But no, it's, you know, this is something to reconnect to, is what the dreams say. And we have that access every night when we go to sleep. So, you know, and you know that the witches were listening to their dreams, right? I mean, you know, that's where their information came from. If somebody needed healing, you know, they went into that dream space, that in-between realm, whether it's waking or sleeping, and that's where they were always getting the information. Well, it would be this plant that would heal that person's lungs, or it would be, you know, making the elixir when the moon is in this phase rather than the other phase. I mean, that's the kind of knowing you don't find in libraries, you find in that dream state of mind. So you know that's where the information they got was. And so I think we have to recognize that information, that library inside of us is still there, you know, is that we can still connect to that. So I feel like I feel like it's the dream knowing that is going to help us to preserve and resurrect what these women knew that that we don't have in libraries, in book, you know, physical books in libraries, but it's in the library of our own inner Akashic records. Yeah.
That's so comforting. And I know viewers will find that really comforting as well, that it's here and it's been here all along. We've right. got to tap into this.
It is. And so I would say to the viewers who, you know, some of you maybe don't, haven't been exposed to the idea of really tracking your dreams, just know that these are sacred events that you're having at night. And even though they seem to be very pedestrian, sometimes it's just, you know, ran into an old boyfriend and what my mom said, or, you know, it can look like it's just the casual thing. There's an energy and an information system that's behind that archetypally and symbolically that is speaking to you every single night. And it's, the, you know, they're just precious, you know, it's precious information.
Yes. Would you like to share more around the roles dreams can play? You've already touched on that in our recovery, and also around like dream thinking, recording our dreams.
Right. I like to use the word dream thinking because it's a mode of consciousness. It's a mode of thought that is we need. In order to get into the state of mind that's dream thinking, we need to be able to abandon our rational linear mind. You know, and the rational linear mind is good for a few things, not a lot, but a few things. It's good for, you know, it, but we've somehow made it the master and the king of the mind and of the world, and everybody else internally is like locked out of, you know, this kingdom of the rational linear mind. So it's like a child that needs to be put, you know, in its little playroom over there. This part of our mind is like, I will get back to you later, but I'm still here in my mind, in my senses, in my sensibilities. And a place, excuse me a minute. A place that I learned to do that is when I've been on vision quests. Where I go into nature and I really let the rational mind go. And it's amazing how much you can actually let it go. When you're not in a situation where you have to use it, it's like putting the broom in the closet, closing the closet door, and you just don't have to use that tool right now. It's not necessary. And it's kind of like that. And all of a sudden I'm listening, I'm hearing the voices of the trees and the birds. And it's like, there's a whole other intelligence. And it's like even the divas and the fairies, you start to sense, you know, that there's the other than human realm of existence that has a powerful bit of intelligence and playfulness. Mm-hmm. But the vision quest is a powerful rite, and that's a beautiful thing to do if somebody has a chance to do it. But we can do that for 15 minutes a day, you know, find your, what I call a sit spot in nature and just be there and let that rational mind go and let your dream thinking mind arise. And sometimes, you know, as I'm sure we're all aware, you can, that dream thinking mind can take over when we're just driving a car. We only have to be engaged a little bit, you know, to remember our turns and stay in our lane and do the right things, you know. But otherwise, you know, there's that sort of way that we can let the linear thought go and invite the more poetic thought, like your beautiful poem today. That, I mean, that was total dream thinking poem. So beautiful. Thank you for that. That was so powerful.
Yeah. And that was my dream, you know. Thank you for my dreams.
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, and thank you for being available to that, you know, being available to it and then bringing it out to all of us. Mm. So, yeah. So, you know, I just really encourage people to feel, sometimes when you walk in a room and you can't remember why you came.
Often.
We think of that as a problem, which it can be. But, you know, sometimes it's because your dreaming mind it just wants more attention. So, give it that, you know, just drop whatever it was you were thinking and can you give it 2 minutes? Just like be there, you know, and don't be afraid of that aspect of mind that doesn't need thoughts and direction and doing, that just wants to be. So, you know, I really encourage dream thinking because I think that's where the wisdom of nature revisits us. And that's where what the witches knew can find us. And then we can work with what comes if we learn to trust it. You know, sometimes it just seems like fantasy or, oh, I'm just making this up. But no, there's, you know, there's real potent, powerful senses that arise when we give it the space like that.
Yes. Yeah. So reassuring that we can do our own vision quests just by allowing, you know, as a starting point and opening up and engaging with.
Right. You know, and if and when you do go to your sit spot, wherever it is, you know, I often recommend that if it can be the same place you go to every day, you know, the spirits of that place kind of get to know you and expect you and you feel more comfortable there. But it can be, you know, it can be just wherever you can find along your path in life. But do it, you know, with intentionality, just the way a vision quest is done, you know, to like ask to enter this space. You greet the spirits that are there, open yourself like you would in somebody's home to their conversation. When you go to somebody's home, you don't usually just sit down and start talking. You kind of listen and sense, you know, what's going on in the home and let the conversation arise. So you do that in your sit spot too. So yeah, make it a ritual and you can have your own ongoing vision quest in such ways.
I love that because there's so much talk around self-care, but it's almost become a buzzword.
Yes.
You know? And, you know, my previous life was in the corporate world and it's kind of that word that's been used more often now, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the vision quest just, you know, fills me with so much inspiration.
That's a real self-care thing to do. Yeah. Yeah. Just give yourself that connection and that let yourself be nourished by it. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned your large library. I'm just having this image of your big library of envious dreams that you've recorded. So would that be one way that people can remember their dreams and open up as well as being available for the vision quest?
You mean creating a dream journal? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So like, writing them down. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. I think it's one of the best things for self-care and for preserving and sort of catching the messages from the divine mind, you know, from the deep inner soul of the world, is to sit down if you can every morning and record your dreams, you know, be really conscientious about it. About, you know, put a pad and paper next to your bed and record the dreams just as you get up. Try to remember before you even move your body where you just were, and then take a few notes. And then when you can, write the narrative out in a dream journal and keep your dream journal. And then look back, you know, over what you've been dreaming. And, you know, it's as dreams go, you know, they're so easy to forget. Even when we write them down, I can look at it a week later and think, wow, I had that dream. You know, so it's, they deserve to be reviewed and then see the sort of the through line of what's, you know, what's the narrative that's emerging now from my dreaming mind that is sort of like, to me, it's like an x-ray. It's looking at the bones of your life that you can't see with your outer eye. You know, it's like the dreams show you the, you know, the inner sort of structure of your life and what's really going on. You know, what's going on out here is part of a big illusion that we're living and we're learning to deal with that. But, you know, the truth of things is in the dreams. Mm. So yeah, record them and get back in touch with that aspect of your being and ask others about their dreams, you know, just create the conversations.
Yeah. Yeah, I was when I was writing this poem, I was just sharing it with my son. He was asking what I was doing. Like, I'm writing this poem. It's about a dream I had, which he thought was kind of weird. He's nine and just very funny. And then he got a bit, curious and started asking, well, I want to remember my dreams. He says he doesn't remember them because he doesn't, I do ask him, he says he doesn't remember them. So how can we encourage, our children? My daughters will sometimes share their dreams, they'll remember. How can we encourage that, especially for kids and the next generations, as well as ourselves?
That's such an important question. You know, it's a question we should all be living with. If you ask your child what they dream, sometimes they'll have something for you, but usually you just really have to listen with that ear to it. I have a 5-year-old grandson, and he'll be talking about blah, 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 whatever, but all of a sudden comes this thing. You know, I was in the backyard and a big tomato came out of the sky and hit, or whatever. Hit Arlene, my daughter, on the chin. And, it's like in the middle of all of his stuff with Legos and everything else, but here comes this dream. Mm-hmm. So if you listen for it and recognize it, and then give it a little space and then say what happened, and give them some ideas about how to flesh that out, and when they know that somebody's listening, often they'll remember more about it, or they'll start to distinguish that there's a story here. I would say listening. Sometimes when he's in the bathtub, the water is like an element that sometimes, sometimes when we get in the shower, all of a sudden this inspiration starts coming. There's something about the element of water that sometimes brings us to that place, or the conductivity of whatever that intelligence is comes to us through water. And sometimes when I'm listening to him in the bathtub, he tells me remarkable stories. He remembers past lives. He'll start telling me all about it. And I was there, and you weren't a grown up yet. You were a baby. And it's like, okay, he's got the whole story and the whole scenario. And so just listen to kids with an ear to respecting. It's not nonsense. It's sense. They're making sense. It's just nonsense to that linear, rational agenda. It doesn't support that. It supports another kind of agenda. And how to be in touch with yourself and the world. So don't think of it as nonsense. Think of it as, what is the sense they're making here? And why is this coming up now?
Mm. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, listening. Yeah. A deeper layer of listening.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. When it, for some reason, I'm thinking just to tell you this part, but when he had the thing of the tomato hitting my younger daughter on the chin, he had that dream in her house. And I realized that he doesn't know about traumas that she experienced earlier in life, like being diagnosed with diabetes and a few other things. And I felt like he was in her house, in the matrix of her consciousness. And he started getting this story of how she got smacked by this and then that. And I could read the story in that symbolic way. He just picked it up out of the ether there. He just got it. But he kind of had to go to her house to pick it up because it's the matrix of her life that he was in. He wouldn't get that dream here. He would get it there. So, I mean, there's so much intelligence in these things. You start to understand what's being communicated and what's being remembered or received.
Yeah, that's amazing. The whole symbology and metaphor of that. Yeah.
Right.
Bringing through. Yeah. And how healing that can be to just bring that up and speak it.
Right. Yeah. And just to recognize, it's like, it's a tragedy to me that we dismiss that, that we just don't even treat it like it has any importance in our lives. So whatever we can with children, be so respectful and never let them feel like it's an assignment, just really be open and see what they say and be respectful of what comes.
Yeah.
And help them to respect it too, not just dismiss it. You know, go to your school books and do that, but don't do this.
Yeah.
That's the message we all got when we were little, is put all that away now and pay attention to what I'm telling you, the teacher that's in this book.
Yes. Yeah. Filling them up with more stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which a lot of it is very valuable. And a lot of it's just what the patriarchy wants us to think. You know, it's the history that's recorded by the winners. It's not really the story that, you know, that could be told by the witches or the indigenous people who were eradicated.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the title of this summit, Healing the Witch Wounding, it's really the wounding, the feminine wounding, the colonial wounding, you know, it's huge religious wounding. So it's kind of a catch-all for everything. And it's so, so interlinked as well.
Yes, yes, it is. And it's, you know, it's a current wounding. It's not what happened back then. It's what's happening now. What happened, you know, that is still recorded in our DNA. There's still so much fear and shame that got recorded from how it was treated back when. And so, you know, I find myself even now today, as much attention and respect as I've given this, kind of looking over my shoulder psychologically about who's going to come and hurt me because of this, because of knowing this or saying this. It's like we, you know, that trauma, that collective trauma, is still very alive. And we have to support ourselves and each other as we work through that, resurrecting all this.
Yes, yeah. And I love that you use that word resurrecting. I think you said it earlier as well. It's so poignant that we're resurrecting this our way.
Right, and that, you know, that image was in what you were saying about it, just feels like it's rising up out of the earth. It's like a resurrection of something that had been pushed down too long, too hard, suppressed, and now it is just like rising up like vapors out of the earth, where we can start to receive it if we will.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And the experience I had where this idea came through for this summit was in August, visiting the Edinburgh dungeons, and I'll share this with viewers in my talk for the summit in more detail, but. So many witches were burnt in the Esplanade of Edinburgh Castle, and that's built on an extinct volcano. So like there's such an energy there already in the rocks. And then on top of that is all the things that have happened there, you know, the atrocities. So it really feels like it's vibrating in this way that we have to pay attention. We have to say, no, not anymore. That was what I was saying, not anymore, and we've got to explore this and tease it apart, see what's there.
Right, give it our just deep respect, you know, just really say, okay, I'm listening now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So yes, on that note, for you, you know, I've watched a number of your talks online, and I'm wondering for viewers that maybe haven't heard you speak before, you'd want to share about your journey to where you are now in these current times, and particularly around the rise of the witchiness, the feminine consciousness, all of that.
Right.
If you'd want to share any of that that may be relevant to.
Yeah, sometimes it is relevant to tell our stories of what, you know, kind of what it was like for us as we started to remember. And so, you know, it happened for me, I would say, in the early 90s. So that's, what's that going on, almost 30 years now. But I, you know, it's very vivid recollection. It was like, kind of like what we've been describing, like this resurrection of all of a sudden this like feminine soul that was just coming up into my bones that I didn't know was there. I'd been trained, you know, very culturally, and I was a minister in a religion, and it was a beautiful thing, but it was, you know, it had its rules, its ways of thinking, and I was in a, you know, in a certain way, in a particular kind of dynamic in my marriage and family, where you're the, you know, whatever, you know, it was like I had my structure of life, and all of a sudden comes all this remembrance, and I didn't know that I'd invited it. Certainly I had, but because I was on a spiritual journey, but you know, it was coming on its own, sort of like the way the Me Too movement has been rising up in this last 4 years. It's like, it's just coming on its own, and you just can't not pay attention because its energy is just so profound. But all of a sudden there was a part of me that was just so strong and knew what she wanted to do. And a lot of times it wasn't what, you know, the structure of my life required of me. And, you know, I realized there were ways that I'd been spoken to very dismissively by certain people in my life. You know, just like, poof, pshaw, you know, and I just sucked it up. I didn't, you know, you're raised that way. And, you know, in Catholic schools and classrooms where it's just pshaw, 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 you know, whatever. And so you're trained to, but all of a sudden this, whatever this was rising up in me wasn't having it anymore. It's like, what do you mean, pshaw? I just said something. It was important. You know, it's like all of a sudden I couldn't suck it up anymore, you know? And it was not a welcome situation in certain relationships. Wow. So, and it was, you know, it was like, at that time, I kind of wished I could have sucked it up a little and just not been so alive with this, but it was happening and I could not. And so the result of that, to say, is as careful as I tried to be and wanted to be, I had to be true to what this was. And the result was I lost my vocation. I ended up resigning from the ministry, which I'd never expected to happen. And then within about 3 years after that, the marriage was over. And I never wanted that to happen. And so my life was just shattered. It was just everything I knew about myself, even my beliefs were gone. You know, the things that were the structure of my mind and, you know, how I conducted my life, all that was gone. It was like this massive void, but something started filling the void that was so familiar. It was like, oh, this is who I really am. This is, you know, I've been this all along, and somehow never had the space to breathe into it. So as much as there was the exhilaration and the sort of confidence and the commitment to what was happening there, there was also the destruction of a life that I had known that was, you know, I wish it wouldn't have had to happen that way, but it did. It just did. And so, you know, I would just say for some people, not for everyone, you know, but for some people, it can be a very destructive process in the life. Like you were saying, I don't know your story and I'd love to hear it. I hope you're going to be telling it, but you were in corporate and now you're not.
Yes.
I hear that, you know, a lot with people. It's like,
it's like magic.
The structure of your life is not going to support this thing that starts happening.
Yeah.
And it can be very painful and you have to trust it. At the same time, you're very sensitive to how to live through it, the way it affects the other people in your life too. You know, it's like, it's a lot to manage, but it has to happen. It's like these women in the Me Too movement, which I think is such a profound thing that, you know, they never wanted to tell all these stories because it disrupted their livelihood. It disrupted their partnerships. It disrupted the corporate culture. They didn't choose to be that person who was burning down everything, but the truth that was in them, and they had to say it. And so there you go. It's not a fun process. And the old structures usually don't go peacefully away. They really are hard to break down. And there's a lot of resistance inside of us as well as in the external life. So it's a matter of just getting it through it with as much love and as much consciousness and as much commitment and as much trust as you possibly can. When this feminine soul starts telling you her secrets,
yes,
and having her voice, Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I can only imagine what that must have been like to have committed your life, well, your vocation as a minister and practicing mm-hmm. religion in that way, and then realizing, oh no, this other voice isn't going to let me alone.
I thought it was the worst thing that would ever happen to me until my marriage ended. And then that was the worst thing.
Wow.
It was terrible. It was not something I ever sought, was that kind of rupture in my world, but there it was. So
and now, you know, where we are now,
mm-hmm.
and remembering all that, speaking all that again, what difference has this made to your life? You know, seems like a pretty obvious question, but I thought I'd ask it anyway.
Well, it's a beautiful question. It really is. And I'm glad you're asking it, because it's good to give voice to that. You know, mm-hmm. Becoming yourself is the hardest thing you'll ever do. I think that's E.E. Cummings. He has a thing, to be yourself and nobody but yourself in a world that's trying to make you into everybody else is the hardest fight to fight, and never stop fighting. And so becoming yourself really truly is. And it's like the world was trying to make me, you know, into somebody else. And you know, not with evil intentions, just because that was the setup. You're supposed to be this, you're raised that way, your family has, you know, a way of training you, your religion has a way of training you, your whole cultural mindset has a way of training you. And it's, if it's not who you are in the essence of yourself, it's the hardest fight to fight. But when you become yourself, there's nothing else to do. It's like getting oxygen when you've been stuck in a box. You can breathe again. It's like waking up from a spell. You know, it's like we've been under the, you know, like Sleeping Beauty or Snow White, you know, when they're in that spell and they can't wake up.
Yeah.
It's like waking up from the spell and coming back into a life that was meant to be yours all along. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, as much as I'm sad and still suffer with the consequences of, you know, broken family and all of that, which I would have not wanted, I can't even imagine being that suppressed, repressed, caged person that I was. It was fine for when I wasn't awake. Once I'm awake, I recognize it as a cage, and it would kill me to stay there. You just can't. So, and I've been living a very beautiful path ever since then. You know, it's mine. It's not something that was prescribed to me by some big corporate religious cultural thing. It's my path. And it's been challenging and delicious. You know, it's just like, so, and I wouldn't ultimately have it any other way, of course. You know, it's like there are prices to pay for what we gain in the world. But, you know, here I am talking to you, my sister.
Yeah.
And my sister that I just met.
In your soul home in Scotland.
Right. Yeah. So there are just such treasures to be received through it all. So. Yeah,
and I love when you're saying it's mine, you know, it is yours, it's your path, your way.
Right, exactly. Nobody else was prescribing this. And it's new every day. So you get your, you know, you listen to your dreams when you put your feet on the floor and you follow it.
Yeah. And how do you think then that, or feel that your training in your old life and all that you learned and stepped away from, how does that, if it does, inform what you do now, or weave through maybe what you do now?
That's such a beautiful question. I'm so glad you're asking that question. It's, you know, everything in my former life. I'm very lucky. I didn't live through childhood abuse or any of the things that some people come to themselves through, having to live through those kinds of traumas. Oh my gosh, I had a beautiful, sweet family, well-intentioned in every way, raising me Catholic, and I loved what I learned through the Catholic religion. I cherish it every day. I had to leave it because I recognized at about the age of 10 that we weren't the only show on earth, and that's what they wanted us to believe. And I just knew that it wasn't so. So then I went into a religious setting where I studied all the religions of the world. And so the ministry that I was in, we read all the scriptures, all the prophets, did all the festivals, the Buddha festival, as well as the Christian festivals, it's like we had them all. And we appreciated and enjoyed, the sort of inclusivity of it all. So I learned something, there every day I cherish what I learned in every situation there. I certainly cherish the marriage that I had, the family that we raised, all of that. It was just, it was 20 years, 20 of the best years of my life, So I cherish it all, and I had to break away from it. In my case, it wasn't that me breaking away from the marriage, it was my ex breaking away, because I think I'd changed, and I wasn't. Whatever, he's got his story, but anyway, he had to break away, and so he did, and that's good for him and us, because it needed to happen. But I cherish it all. That's the answer to the question is, every bit of it informed me. I cherish it, and just like nature has its rhythms, it has all the seasons, and all the leaves fall off the trees, and then something else comes in the spring. And so all the leaves fell off the tree of my life, and then something else came in the spring, and it keeps happening. So yeah, I feel like it's just all part of nature. It's not, I don't demonize or regret any of those choices in my life. They were all really important, real gifts, real value there. Absolutely, every bit of it.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. It feels like such a rich learning that you've had, and spiritually, religiously, learning about world religions, and probably celebration every day with all the festivals and.
Yeah, there's something to celebrate every day. And now with what the witches knew, there's the seasons of the moon and the seasons of the plant life, and it's like you go into that dimension, and there's the richness of everything about nature. I had a little meditation yesterday where I went in about what the witches knew. I was asking the question, and it was like, here were the dewdrops on the spider webs, and here were the fragrances coming from the plants, and all of this such a delicate balance and so powerful. And there were the fairy spirits over there that were kind of giving a little bit of ideas about things. And it was just like I went into that whole space. And that's what's being resurrected now, is, that whole intelligence and how to be a part of that web. And then when we intrude upon that balance of nature, that's when we get what we're getting now with so much of the, the hurricanes, the floods, the fires, the, all of it. It's like, I was seeing the image of a seesaw. My son-in-law had made a seesaw for my grandson. And you push one down and the other goes up. And it's like, that's what we've done to nature. You disrupt the balance and it does this. It's just like, we don't think we created that. We have. The shamans will tell us that, we created this. You push, and it's just nature doing what nature does. Push this down, this goes up. So we disrupt the balance and this happens. And so if we can learn to live again in balance with nature and in that really sensitive way, then I think that we can live into a new era that is really balanced and beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. And I often feel that that's an inside out journey, that we've got to find that balance within ourselves.
Right, yes.
First or at the same time as the external action that we take as well.
It starts just one by one by one. It's just us doing our best with our own inner work and then supporting each other in it. And there's a lot of power in that though too. It's not, we're not helpless, we're powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
We absolutely are. And we've got so many people and witches and guides and nature supporting us.
Right.
Which feels great. Wow. So yes, what else did I want to ask? What advice would you have for people, viewers watching, that are commissioned to rise with the feminine and the witches and preserving all of this wisdom?
Right. Well,
a big question there.
It is a big question. And, you know, I guess the first thing would be really listen to your dreams. You know, that's just what I tend to value so much. And have courage, you know, when that information rises up. And courage is, you know, it's the French word that I don't know how to say, coeur, you know, is the heart. Courage is heartfulness, you know, it's a strong heart. So it's like, keep your heart up. And there are ways that we can do that. It's like when the heart gets deflated or defeated or, you know, disappointed, there are ways to strengthen the heart, you know, give your heart what it needs to keep your heart up. Because it takes courage to do this. But courage is a beautiful thing, you know, and the heart can do it. It will do it. So, and I would say also, you know, when I was thinking of this the other day, preserving what the witches knew. Well, the witches knew about jealousy and suppression and, you know, the evil that can come against you. So it's not good to be naive about that. You know, it's like, don't be naive that it's going to ignite some kind of instinctual force sometimes in the world that is going to try to put its foot on your neck. Like Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, just get your foot off my neck. You know, I'm not asking for any favors, but there will be those forces in the world that will just try to put its foot on your neck. And so that's something the witches knew, you know, preserving what the witches knew is how to protect yourself and be careful and not naive. And then just keep the balance, you know, keep the balance of nature, you know, balance the different parts of yourself and your life and your relationships and your world. And support one another.
Yes, yes. It really isn't a journey. It's not a journey in isolation at all. We've got to support each other.
Yeah, yeah, we really need that. And recognize the ones that will support you. And then maybe don't give so much time to the ones that won't. You know, just recognize that it can be a waste of your energy and time. Sometimes we're just begging people to love us anyway, but they're not gonna. Yes, just let them go.
Yeah, absolutely, because our energy, it's like conserving our energies for these times as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So just, you know, surround yourself with the people that are really going to be, that you can support and that will support you, and love everyone as best you can in your life.
Beautiful. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share and also share about your free gift? As well.
Oh, the free gift. Yeah, thank you for asking. So the free gift is the monthly dream symposium that Jocelyn Mercado and I have been conducting. I think it's almost 4 years.
Wow.
3 or 4 years now that we've been doing it. It was like in February. I think it was in February of 2017 that we started. So that would be 4 years coming up. So every month, it's on a Friday. You go to my website, tariaward.com. There's a dream symposium page, and you can sign up, register, and then you'll get the link and the dates and the notices and the recordings. So if you can't make it at the live dream symposium, a lot of people from all over the world in different time zones can't be there for the live ones, but they listen to them all the time. And then they send their dreams to me, and I often will read them at the beginning of the symposium. So we're listening to each other's dreams. And it's just a beautiful thing that, you know, that people from all parts of the world, it's a global event, and all parts of the world are having these dreams that sort of like are pieces of a jigsaw puzzle coming together. So you start to see the bigger picture when you put all the pieces together of the dreams. And it's a beautiful experience of just listening to the way the dreams think. You know, it's like, it teaches us all to really respect that aspect of mind that is in the dream at all times, waking and sleeping. So it's a way to honor that aspect of our own self and of the world. And it's really exciting and interesting and fun. So please come. You're all welcome. It's free. And it happens every month.
That's gorgeous. It feels very alive as well. And it's not about interpreting individual dreams, is it? It's about creating that global puzzle.
Yeah, it's just really listening to the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Often I will help with some comments to understand the how to work with the symbolic nature of the dream, so it's not taken literally, because that's one of the worst things we can do is take a dream literally. You know, I will say that to anyone who's just starting with a dream. Don't take it literally. It's speaking metaphorically and symbolically. If there's a death in the dream, it's not talking about a physical death. It's talking about the death of an idea or an attitude or an aspect of the relationship or whatever. But it's, you know, so that's the kind of comments that I'll make in the dreams, just to teach the language of the dream. But basically, we're just listening. We're just listening to what they say.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Have you any final words to share before we end this?
Your final words were, witches, rise up and return to your power. So I'll end with your beautiful thing. And I was like, yes, witches, rise up and return to your power.
Yes, come on. Let's do this.
Yeah, let's do this thing together, you know, with love and joy and celebration. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Those words came as I was walking back down Edinburgh Castle Esplanade, and it felt like it was in the voice of the Cailleach, who's the Irish witch. Well, Irish and Scottish, I guess. She's like the woman of the land. So thank you for bringing her here to today.
Thank you for bringing her here. So we're doing that together. That's just brilliant.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It's been such a joy speaking with you.
Thank you for the invitation. It's just a pleasure. Yeah. Blessings to everyone. Just so much love to all of you.
Yeah. Thank you. See you all again soon.